The following is an unrehearsed interview with Jewel Thomas, the Deputy Regional Librarian of Lake Cumberland Regional Library. The tape is being made for the Oral History Commission and the Kentucky Department for Libraries and Archives as part of the project, The Bookmobile, and Historical Perspective. The interview is conducted by Gene Wiggins at Burkesville, Kentucky, on October 29, 1985. Jewel, you have had a long and varied background with the Bookmobile and libraries in the state of Kentucky. Could you first of all tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you became interested in libraries?
Gene, all my life I've enjoyed reading. I even remember books that was read to me when I first started the school in the first grade. And some of the books a teacher read to me back then, when I got grown, I even bought, because I was so, the books were so vivid. So all my life, books have meant a lot. When I was in grade school and high school, my English teacher is still alive that I went to in high school, and she tells me now that you were the only person we ever had that read all the books in our high school library. So books have been a part of my life. And when I found out in 1954 that we were getting a bookmobile, I was intensely intrigued by it, because the idea of carrying books out to people who could not get reading material meant so much. And through the years between 54 and when I could get the job, or got the job as driver, I remember walking across the square in Burkesville one Saturday afternoon, and I saw the bookmobile, and I said, some of these days I'm going to drive that thing, never ever believing I could get the job. But in 1957, in October, I had three children by then, and the youngest was five, and in that year, Philip Bradcliffe came out to my home. She was chairman of the library board here in the county. And she came out to my home and asked me would I be interested in driving, because I had applied for the job when the regular driver was moved into the library. And she asked me would I be interested in driving. And I said, yes, I don't know anything about it, but I'm very much interested in driving that little green bookmobile. And she said, well, the job is yours. Can you start working November the 1st? And of course, I asked her how much my salary would be. It was $72 a month for 3 days a week. It was very, very wonderful. The only training I got for the bookmobile was be sure and visit all the schools and take it to different filling stations. And they gave me a list of filling stations to use. And make
sure.
Why
different filling stations?
Because then we didn't have very much money. And either the filling stations would sell us gas at cut rate prices. The superintendent's office gave us $100 a month to help support the bookmobile. And now that had to come my salary and the upkeep of that bookmobile. That was $100, a whole $100 we spent a month on this. The school helped, and if that the schools and the local support, such as the filling stations gave us, there would have been no way to have kept it. The library board had to agree to get a bookmobile, that they would provide a driver and a place to house the books and the maintenance of the vehicle, such as it is today. That's the way the whole thing works at the present time. So the Board of Education gave us $100 to pay for the program. But without the filling stations giving us the gas and the maintenance work to keep that little green bookmobile on the road, it would never have been accomplished. That was the coldest thing in the wintertime I ever saw, the hottest thing in the summertime you ever drove, but it was a lot of fun. I used to wear my husband's insulated underwear, and when it'd be extremely cold, I would have to stop at people's homes to warm my hands and feet up, because they'd get numb. The heaters on them were not very substantial. You just simply froze to death. They had sliding doors. Well, actually, it was a bread truck, a converted bread truck. It was top-heavy. The bookmobile held 750 books, smaller books. And if you hit a chug hole in the road, every book in that thing would fall out. And if you, backing was very hard, and some of the schools I visited had to back up the lane to get to the school because there was no place to turn around. If you drove in head first, then you had to back out the lane. I remember one time I went to a school called Judeo, and that's down the low end of the county, and you had to back for about a quarter of a mile to get into the school. Well, that day I didn't want to back in. I thought I could drive in and could turn around. I couldn't. So I lost all the books in the bookmobile, and for about an hour I was outside placing all the books back in. The driver came to see if I had died or something, because I hadn't come in the room as I should have. But then I had to back out. Schools in our county in 1957, we had 28 schools. Some of them were one-room schools, some of them were two-room schools. But when you drove up in the schoolyard, the little noses would press against the windows, and the teachers always said you might as well turn out school for the period of time the bookmobile was there, because the children were so eager to get a book. And the first round of schools that I went to, I stayed lost most all the time. I would start down a road and I'd stop and ask somebody, where's the school building? And I found all of them with the exception of Smith Grove School, or Irish Bottom School, rather. And it was sitting down in the bottom almost to the river, Cumberland River, up in the northeastern section of the county. And I almost drove in the river trying to find that school. It was sitting over in the field, hidden by trees, and so I stopped on top of the riverbank and asked the people, where's the schoolhouse? And so they told me. But you know, the children, back then we could count circulation for however many people read the book, not as it is today, but we kept reading lists, and we kept envelopes on the walls hanging on strings, a child's name across the front of each of those envelopes, or they kept little booklets. And when I went back to the schools, I would ask how many children read this book, and their little hands would go up. We counted hands, and we counted reading lists. We counted the names of the books in those envelopes. It's a circulation. Circulation for this county was huge. I couldn't believe the children would be reading as much as they said they read, but the teacher would verify the fact that her children or his children read like that. I remember one little boy in a colored school here in town. We have the schoolroom is still standing, a two rooms colored school, because back then schools were segregated. So I went to the school with the bookmobile. Mr. John Burbage was a teacher from the fifth grade up, and Mrs. Elliott was a teacher for the lower grades. And one little black boy got on the bookmobile. He got the biggest book on there. It was just about as large as he was. And I said, son, you can't read that book. He said, Miss Jewel, I won't take this home. He said, my mammy ain't never seen a book this big before. So I let him take it home. And wouldn't you have?
Sure.
He didn't get anything out of it as far as reading. He couldn't read it, but it was a big book, and he wanted his mother to see it. So many stories and so many incidences are recalled to mind when I start thinking back about the schools. Like Spearsy School never was warm. It was a two-room school, and they had potbelly stoves, but the buildings were so open they never were warm. But the children were interested. They wanted books, and they would generally ask if they could take out two books per child. Sometimes we did not have the book stock for them, because books back then were very limited. I remember one time I went to Burksville School, and with eighth grade students, and I had received, I think, 40 or 50 new books. So I divided them between rooms, the new books. But the eighth graders got a book, and one of them was actually too old for them. It had some things in it that, or sex scenes in it, that back then would be really raunchy. Now they would just be extremely mild and nothing would ever been said about them. But Mrs. Gabbard was the teacher of that room, and she called me aside the next time I went. And she said, Julie, you ought to check these books more carefully. And then I said, what's the matter? And she said, well, First, I caught the little girls over in the corner reading that book and pointing to things. She said, then I went back to see if I could find what they were reading, and they would shut the book, and I never could find them from them. But she said, then when I caught the little boys doing, I sneaked up behind them. She said, they was talking about the various things, and it was talking about a woman being raped. It was not specific. It was just talking about a woman being raped, and they were sniggering about it. She said, read your books, and I explained that a driver could not read all the books. You have to do the best you can. When I started driving, my daughter was 5. And as I said, well, I got $72 a month. I could not hire anybody to take care of my daughter and make enough money to pay me. So I asked the library board, is it permissible to take Patricia with me? And they told me that I could. And I did, with the exception of the really cold days. Those days she stayed with her grandmother, Thomas. But I would take a long banana box, and you've seen those long pasteboard boxes,
yes,
and set it down underneath the heater. And at 5, she would still get sleep in the afternoon, so I took a quilt and put in that box with some pillows underneath the quilt. And I would wrap her up when it got cold so she could get her nap. When she started riding with me, she was very shy. She would not talk to the children at all. But by the end of the time she rode but a year, she got ready to go to school, she came out of the shyness. She could tell the little children the really good books to read. And the first day of her school, I went with her. She took 3 books under her arm to read to the little children in her first grade. She learned from the bookmobile that the books were her friends. And this was true of school children all over the county, because people kept asking me all the time I drove the bookmobile, what are you running for? As if I was running for a political office. Well, I had been told by the library board that somewhere down the road, we're going to have to pass a library tax to keep our bookmobile and our library programs. Well, in 1959, I moved to Litchfield and was gone for a year. Ms. Ruby Lee was the county librarian here in this county then. And Reverend Roper was the bookmobile driver, because he had been hired to replace me. When I came back in a year, we lived in Litchfield for a year, and we moved back to the county. Then I was hired back as the county librarian because Mrs. Lee didn't want to work anymore. And then pretty soon, Reverend Roper decided he didn't want to drive anymore. So I was hired as bookmobile librarian for 3 days a week and county librarian for 3 days a week. And I had 3 children and in my home to take care of, so I took care of everything. I grew my gardens, did my work, and did all this kind of stuff. But then we were told, if you do not pass the library tax, you will lose your bookmobile and your public library. Well, then's when I knew what I'd been running for all these years. I had the school children backing the bookmobile program because that was their program. It came to them. And so many older people, I did not know how to reach. But I used a gimmick to pass the library tax in the county. I stopped with the bookmobile, and by that time we had changed from the little one to a big one. And by that time then I was trying to pass this tax. And I had an aunt who gave me a small colored dessert dish. I know now it was carnival glass. I did not know then what it was. So I would use that as a gimmick to stop at older people's homes who were not ordinarily using the bookmobile to get inside their doors. I would knock on the door and say, I'm collecting these colored dishes. Do you have any like this? So the lady would ask me to go into the kitchen, and most generally they'd sell them to me. By that time, the husband would either be in the fields, he'd see this big bookmobile out front, wonder what in the heck was going on. So he would come into the kitchen, what are you doing? Who are you and what are you doing? So then I'd explain, I'm driving the bookmobile, and we're going to have to pass the library tax. You know, over the period of time, I'd be checking dishes. But we passed that library tax, 5-1 on ballot. I had 48 pieces of dishes. I did not know what they were. But we were successful in using that as part of the gimmick to get to talk to people, to tell them what library services were.
Public relations is a big part of the game, isn't it?
Yes, ma'am. But that was a kind of public relations that I came out the winner of in several aspects, because we had an assured library program. And the children in the county had done so much to help get this program set up and going, because they used the books and they knew the value. And in one community, the seminary community, which is at the top of the Briar Creek Hill, there was a school out there, and a lot of the people were older people that did not have children in school. So I asked all those children to pick a man or a woman and write a letter to that particular person in the community that didn't have any children at all, explaining to them what those books meant. Well, needless to say, we carried that precinct about 4-1. Everybody that I could get to talk about libraries and about bookmobiles, we had this county so well organized to pass this tax that you couldn't talk to anybody. You couldn't say, good morning, how are you? They say, how are you doing on the library? But the fact that bookmobile sold itself, because we supplemented schools who had nothing. That's what we started with. We had nothing in the schools. And, well, maybe 3 or 4 books in some of them. Some of them had not a book. Some of them, the teachers had a few magazines. But at that particular time, we were the only source of reading material they were getting. There was no school libraries as such back then. Of course, there is now, but they're still not, to all intent and purposes, what they're supposed to be. But our bookmobile served homebound people. It still does. We served sick people. In fact, I had a man who used the bookmobile who could not get into the bookmobile. He could come to the steps. He had an extremely bad heart. He could not read above the 4th grade level. But he would say, Jewel, pick me out some books that I can read. The day the man died, he had a history book, one of those Childhood of America series books on his bed, and they used to be called the little blue bag books, on his bed that he'd been reading. That meant a lot to me. That meant a lot to him, because I was putting together a man who wanted to read something with the material he could read. To me, bookmobiles in our state have been the enlightening program for our library services. We had to have, and still have to have, libraries with good collections to supplement what we're doing with the bookmobiles. But the bookmobiles are reaching out hand-to-hand, people-to-people, one-on-one basis for service of libraries. And ma'am, it'll never change. It's always going to have to be there with this one-on-one service. After I left here in 1964, I was a county librarian and the bookmobile librarian both. But my husband had been transferred to Eastern Kentucky as a civil engineer with the State Highway Department. You're subject to transfers if you were in the Army. So you move. Well, he moved up there and was living in a trailer park in a very small trailer, coming home on Friday night and going back Sunday afternoon. He finally reached a point, he said, Jewel, I'm going to quit coming home. Now, you either move to Eastern Kentucky and live with me, or you can live down here. Well, I had 3 children, and my children and I loved Homer very much, so we moved to Eastern Kentucky. He came home one Saturday, Friday night, and he said, we're going to Somerset in the morning. We're going by a trailer, and we're moving. Well, I cried all Friday night, and Saturday morning I got up, and we went to Somerset, and we looked at 2 trailers. 2, mind you. The first one he didn't like. I didn't either. Second one I didn't like, but he bought it. So he said, it's made arrangements with Jasper Trailer Sales to move it to Camden. He said, I've already got the space rented in the trailer park where I've been renting this other trailer. So they moved it up there next Monday. And I had 2 weeks in which to get every organization I was working with, I had to resign. Had to take a leave of absence from my librarian's job. I then had to get everything packed to go to Eastern Kentucky. But we didn't move our household things. We just moved clothes, our cooking utensils and our eating things and our linens, bed linens, because we left our home and left everything in it. In fact, I paid for telephone and lights and a gas bill for the whole 8.5 years we were in Eastern Kentucky. I kept the place up out here. We moved to Eastern Kentucky. I had visited Homer up there two or three times when I moved. I read Jack Sweller's Yesterday's People. I read Night Comes to the Cumberlands about three times to try to figure out Eastern Kentucky people, because I had been told they're just a little bit different from people down where you're from. Yes, ma'am, they're just a little bit different from the people I'm used to here. It was like moving, say, from a sunny climate into a cold climate, back into a sunny climate. I found, when I first moved up there, that I don't really know how to explain those people to start with. They were standoffish. They looked at you as an outsider. I lived there for 8.5 years, and I moved, and I'm still an outsider. I have a son that lives up there. He's been there since we moved. He's married to a girl in Eastern Kentucky. Now they have a divorce, but he's still an outsider. He works up there. He lives there. I found out one thing. Those people have a great deal of dignity. You don't mess with their dignity. You don't make fun of those people. When I moved to Wolf County, they had no life. They had a sign on the outside of the superintendent's office with a padlock on the door, said Public Library. Well, I was taking extension courses then, and I needed some supplementary material. I had to have some books to read. And, well, I went to the superintendent's office, and I asked, can I get you Public Library? No. I said, well, the sign says Public Library here. And they said, well, we've got some books upstairs and some boxes, but you can't get to it. We don't have a librarian. We don't have a library. We don't even know what's in the boxes. So for almost a year, Gene, when I would come to Cumberland County, I took an army duffel bag and I would fill it full of books from the Cumberland County Public Library, put them in the trunk of a car, haul them back to Campton, and circulate them to the kids in the trailer park, and books that I used and read myself. Also, I would borrow books by the box loads from Department of Libraries in Frankfurt, but then it was Extension Service. I studied antique books, and I read everything I could get hold of from the department. They would ship me big boxes of books, and I'd use them and then ship them back. Well, one day, it bothered me that Wolf County did not have anything. So I finally got that library open. They told me that if they could get hold of some money, that they could get some shelves built, that they buy open, you know, we could put the thing together. And they would try to get somebody to volunteer some time to fill as a librarian. Well, there was a lady in that was really strong on libraries, and her name was Mary Belknap Gray. And I wrote to Mrs. Gray that we had some books in Campton. There was a place upstairs where we could set up a library if I had some money to build some shelves. So she sent me some money, and I gave it to the superintendent, who was the chairman of the library board, and he had some shelves built, and they were built out of green lumber. Mm-hmm. And he told me where we could put them up, and I volunteered my time to get the books out of the boxes and put them on the shelves. Well, within 3 months' time, the shelves were swaying in the middle with green lumber. They just won't stand up. And he said, now, Ms. Thomas, we don't have any money to hire you. And I said, well, that's all right. I'll donate my time until you do. Well, I went down there one day, and there was a little girl in the library, and she had the door open. And I said, who are you, honey? She said, I'm a new librarian. And I said, you're the new what? She said, I'm the new librarian. And I said, how are you the new librarian? And she said, well, Mr. Rose came out yesterday and he hired me. They only had about 19 votes in the family, and his people were up for re-election, so you know how she got the job. She did not know anything. She said, I'm waiting for Ms. Thompson or Ms. Thomas or somebody to come and show me how to be the librarian. And I explained to her, now, I'm Mrs. Thomas, but I don't plan to teach you anything, because I put this thing together and have a, you know, the start of a library. We had some books. We didn't have a library. We had some books. And I said, I put this thing together. I've got the shelves. They're alphabetically in order. She didn't know what I was talking about. I said, the numerical system is set up with your classified material. She didn't know what I was talking about. So I said, just work on the catalog card. So she proceeded to staple every card together with Vinnie's five staples. I was also in contact with Margaret Willis. I had written to Margaret Willis and asked her if there was an opening with the State Department in Eastern Kentucky that I might get a job. I had an answer back from Ms. Willis, and I can almost quote you that word by word. She said, "We will hire you as quickly as we get an opening in Eastern Kentucky anywhere, within reason of where you're living." She said, "Your friend Bob Allender from the Lake Cumberland District says that you would be a very valuable employee and that we should hire you if it's at all possible." Well, Bob right now is my supervisor. That went on for a while, and then I found out by attending a community meeting that there might be some monies from the governor's contingency fund to start a partial demonstration in Wolf County. So I went to the community meeting in a week's time, and I approached this group of people. And I said, "We need a library here, and there might be some money if you can appoint a committee to go talk to the governor." And Governor Ned Breathitt was in office then. So they all really got on the ball, and the next day they called the governor's office to see when they could meet with him. And they met with him in about a week's time. There was five people went down to talk to Governor Breathitt. And they came back with a letter of intent for $9,500 that if they could funnel it through the Department for Libraries, that they could get the money. But before then, I had been hired to work with the department. I had been hired to work in Morgan. I was working with the Big Sandy region. And December of 85 was when I was hired. Of 65, I'm sorry. I had taken my merit test, and I had passed the merit test. And I was hired by Mr. Robert Ritchie, Bob Ritchie, because he was a general manager. And Ms. Willis was the state librarian then. And Mr. Kirk was the assistant state librarian. So my supervisor was Pearl Greer from Lawrence County. And I met with Pearl Greer the 1st of January of 66 in Morgan County. In 67 is when we got the library in Wolf County, but in 66 I met with Greer, and she told me that I would be working primarily in Morgan County to start with, that their library needed setting up, their bookmobile program needed to be mapped out, a bookmobile library would have to be put on the road. And Carl Davis was the young man I worked with in Morgan County. Edwin Lacey was the county librarian, and ever loving heart, he would tell me on Monday morning when he came in, the library was not set up yet. He would say, "Now, Ms. Thomas, you know what to do, and I'll be at home in case you need me." And Friday afternoon, he'd come in and he'd say, "Ms. Thomas, you've done awfully well this week. We'll see you Monday morning." So that was how the Morgan County's libraries got actually set up. I was doing the work, and Edmund would help me by giving me a little praise every so often. But it's an odd thing about the Morgan County Library. While I was working in Cumberland County as a bookmobile librarian and a county librarian, we were making up money for Morgan County. They were trying to get out of a corrugated tin building into a building. And people all over the state of Kentucky contributed money for that library building. It was called the Kennedy Memorial Library. And the reason why everybody was so anxious to help was because they did not have a library. They were in this tin building, like corrugated tin roofing. So then they built this really nice building, and the superintendent's office at that time was in the basement, part of the basement. The community room was on one half of the basement, then the other half was the superintendent's offices, but the upstairs was the library. And so I had to get that in order. Pearl Greer and I worked to put the library proper in, but downstairs I was processing books and I was working on vertical file and this kind of thing to get ready to open. Then, after we did this, Wolf County, we came into existence. We got the money, and again, Mary Belknap Gray played a very important part in the Wolf County Library. She furnished the money for the rent on the building. She did that for a year and a half. Half of the money went to the Woman's Club and half of the money went to the Kiwanis Club because they owned the community building. So she paid the rent on the building while we were putting it in. We opened up in May. And in October, we passed the library tax to support the library. We could not get new shelving to put there, even the library. And for $9,500, you don't get a lot. We had to use used shelving from, I believe it came from Hyndman. I'm not quite sure where that used shelving came. And it was so warped that we had to nail and screw the stuff to the walls to keep the shelves from falling over. We had wood shelves, and part of it was metal, but the metal shelves had to be painted. We had to paint the building. The people who worked the library were hired by the state. And we're going to have to quit this side. Okay, they were hired by the state. Billy Howard Adams was hired as county librarian. Of course, I was working for the state. But the state paid Billy Howard's salary. They paid Viola's salary. And the Happy Pappy program, and I think, I don't even know if that had another name, but we call it the Happy Pappy program, hired the bookmobile driver. And his name was Sam something. Anyway, Sam drove the bookmobile, and I had to train him for that job. Viola Brewer was the assistant librarian, and she had been on the school board.
Let's turn to the other side before we start talking about the bookmobile program as it developed there.
Okay. Sam, I cannot remember what Sam's last name was hired because he was being paid by a federal funded program. It was called the Happy Pappy program. And he could drive and he could take care of a bookmobile or a vehicle. And he could read fairly well and he could write pretty well. He did not know a whole lot about books, but with the budget we had, we didn't have enough money to do very much. And so until his program ran out, he was our driver in Wolf County.
Is that the first time they had had bookmobile service?
They had had a little green bookmobile. And when, for some reason, it was no longer being driven. In fact, it was parked over in a field behind Viola Brewer's barn. And they had raised chickens in it. Had chickens in a hen's nest in it. Then when, as I told you, when I first got up there, we had no library, and we got the library building open, and the school board was the county library board as well. They decided to get the little green bookmobile out. Well, we had to get rid of that because it wouldn't run very well, and Viola Brewer had been hired as a driver. And she was driving that for a while, but it couldn't serve very many people because it didn't run very well. It would be on the road one day and off one day. So we got this library demonstration, partial demonstration in for the $9,500 on the governor's funds. The department helped out with every expense they could and all the books they could. They gave us a big bookmobile. And as I say, Sam was driving. Well, Viola was working in the library, and we needed Viola because she had a lot of political clout and she could help us pass the library tax. And she was a good worker. And so Sam was driving the bookmobile, and of course, somebody had to ride with him. And I did not know the territory. He did. But I rode with him to explain how you operate a bookmobile program. And we knocked on doors, and we sold our program real well in that county. Because when the library petition came up, we passed it real well. It was no problem. Then that was pretty well on its own. Periodically, I rode with Sam as a state worker. That was my prerogative, and I was instructed to do so. And of course, he knew we were going to do that. Then Halliday Blackburn was extension librarian in Eastern Kentucky, and she was Pearl Greer's supervisor. Of course, Pearl was my supervisor. And Pearl was working in the Big Sandy. She was working in Lawrence County, and we worked in Elliott County, and Morgan County, Johnson County. And then we were, Halliday asked me to go to Lee County and find out what was wrong with their bookmobile program down there, and their library program as well. We had a young lady who was working in Lee County, and God, the place was terrible. I hadn't been down there about 2 hours. I knew just exactly what was wrong with everything. The bookmobile was the most atrocious looking thing I have ever been in my life. It was filthy. It was a puddle of grease right in the middle of the floor. It looked like where the cows had been roosting. The books were just sort of gummed together with dirt and grease and stuff. And I asked her, what's your circulation last month? 3. I said, how come you had 3? She said, well, nobody wanted the books. And I said, have you ever looked at those books? Do you ever clean them up? Do you ever change the books? Why, no, nobody wants them. But they were paying this young girl to drive that bookmobile. And 1 month, I got to looking at her figure. She had 17. But the month before that I had just got there, she had 3. The library itself was filthy. Her circulation was almost nil. So when I checked it and I went back home and I called Miss Blackburn and I said, I can tell you just exactly what's wrong with your bookmobile program and your library in Lee County. You don't have a driver and you don't have a librarian. Well, we had state workers to go into the library and clean it up. We had what's called a task force. 8 people came down and helped me clean that place up. We put the books on the shelves in correct order. We cleaned the bookmobile up and discarded books and cleaned books and whatever we could possibly do. And she would sit and rock her foot backwards and forwards and whistle and watch us. I never got so mad at anybody in my life as I did her. One day we were all these state people down there cleaning that place up. And she came in and said, I'm not going to be here today. I'm going to Lexington shopping. And she did. So we finally got the bookmobile on the road, or clean enough for the road, and got her quit nicely. And we got a partial demonstration in Lee County. And we had Robertson County was Ms. Nunn's home county, and she had wanted a library over there, but she couldn't find a place that would house it. You have to have a centrally located building. You have to have personnel and you have to have maintenance funds. And so the books that Robertson County would have gotten, Lee County got to start a demonstration with a partial demonstration. And a driver was hired. The young man's name was Ronnie and the county librarian's name was Anna Lee. And they were hired to work a partial demonstration. And again, I had to ride with Ronnie to teach him what to do. We knocked on people's doors. We set up a good program in that county. Except there's only one section in the county he would not go to. He said, the people are not nice people. The people steal all the books, and I'm not going. And we never did go in that section of the county. And to this date, I don't know if they serve it or not. But he was good with people. He was intensely interested in people. And you have to have a person on the bookmobile who likes 3 things. Who likes to drive, and who doesn't mind the care and the maintenance of the vehicle. You have to have someone on the bookmobile who likes people, who doesn't mind talking to a person and then keeping their mouth shut about what the person has said to them. You have to have a person on the bookmobile who likes books, and who will read at least the blurb sheets, if not something in the book. They have to have 3 things to make a successful driver. And then it's very good if the bookmobile librarian and the county librarian can agree and get along. In many instances, I have seen where the bookmobile librarian and the county librarian work for themselves. The library is my library and the bookmobile is my bookmobile, and they don't realize it's one and the same program. One travels, one is stationary. We then went into Allison County while Lee County was getting off its feet and working. And it was rather unique into Allison County. Allison County is the tail end of nowhere. They don't have a lot of money, and they wanted a library. Well, through the efforts of Joe Paulus, a Presbyterian minister, He kept visiting down in Frankfort, and Miss Willis would say, "Jewel, come meet with us," and Miss Gray, we'd have Miss Gray meet with us. So they gave us a bookmobile to use as the main library, and we parked it on the public square, on the western side of the public square. They had no courthouse because it had burned out. They held circuit court and county court in the theater. So we parked this bookmobile on the square, and then we got another bookmobile to drive, and we hired Ruby Gibson to drive the other bookmobile. And believe it or not, the bookmobile that she was assigned was a used bookmobile. And it was the bookmobile that had been assigned to Cumberland County in 62 that had then been transferred up there when Cumberland County got a new bookmobile, or 61 when we got it. Then it had been given to back to the department and was given to Ruby. Well, the first day she drove that bookmobile was Labor Day, and she scared the holy bejesus out of me, because Alsa County is quite mountainous, and there's some good-sized mountains up there. And she drove over one of those mountains and down the other side, just simply flying. When we got stopped on the other side, I said, "Ruby, drive slowly back to town." She said, "What's the matter?" And I said, "Well, you drove too fast, and I'm not used to being scared to death on bookmobiles." I gave up that Labor Day week because it was on Monday, and I gave that up. I worked that day just to drive with her, and I did for many, many days, because our whole library program in Alsa County at that time was the bookmobile. We did not have a library that anybody could go into. We stored the extra books in the unit on the square. People got to complaining they couldn't see around that bookmobile. So we had to do something to have a place to put the books, because we couldn't carry them all on the bookmobile. We had to have things to draw from. We had to have a set of encyclopedias put somewhere, and dictionary and various things to use as backup material. So they rented a motel room. And we had the fourth unit in that motel room. It was just a room with a bathtub, it was in a little bathroom, and had a little closet, and frankly, the closet about the size of this one here, about 3 foot wide and 3 foot deep. Well, that was our work room, the closet was. And in the bathroom, across the tub, we had bookcases. We had the card catalog between the lavatory and the commode. And to get to the commode, you backed into it. But that was our backup unit. That's the truth.
A literal backup unit, right?
It was a backup unit. And the backup unit for the bookmobile, of course, was this library that we had in that motel room. We had one table and two kitchen chairs, wooden chairs. That was our reading area, and that was our charge-out area as well. We didn't check out very many books over there because she could only be in the library as such. For she'd pull a bookmobile in front, and people would come check off the bookmobile, and she needed something she thought might be in the, you know, the library, we called it. She'd go in and pull it out and then check it off the bookmobile. They did not check books very much out of the room. They were checked from the bookmobile. That was the whole effort in there, until we could pass the library tax in Alsa County. Well, they worked hard, and they passed that library tax, but we had problems. The fiscal court had told us we wasn't going to take it. The county attorney had told them, "You must, that's the law." And so the night that they met to take our library petition, he told me, he said, "I'm not going to represent you because you're not going to take this, and so I withdraw from being your all's attorney. You're doing something that's illegal." So they voted not to take that. Well, they finally convinced them that they were being illegal, and they took it. Promptly, an anti-petition was being circulated, but it was being circulated in an illegal way, because five people were calling people up on the phone and says, "We want to take his library tax out. Will you let us sign your name?" And they got permission by telephone to sign maybe half a dozen people's names, and they would sign them right down the petition. So this was brought to the attention of the library board, and I was working with them, and we knew that if it was presented that the library would go out with that anti-petition because the county court would take it, because some of the county officials were the people who were doing this kind of thing. So again, Mary Belknap Gray came into the front. She put up the money to hire a handwriting expert, and Alice Moore from Ashland was her handwriting expert. It became, in the circles over there, known as the handwriting on the wall case, because we used an OPAC projector and flashed the signatures on the screen in the theater when we had the court hearing to disallow their petition. We had everybody's name that was in question summoned by the sheriff. And he'd bring these people in, they said, well, I told you so-and-so to sign my name on that. Well, every time they say, I told so-and-so, you know it was an illegal signature. But Mrs. Gray furnished the money. Again, she was pushing for anything in the mountains that would help people, Mrs. Gray was for. She was a very unique person. She was very small. And I'd like to describe Mrs. Gray a little bit, if it's okay.
Wonderful.
She's very raw-boned. She was a very small person. She did not have an ounce of flesh on her. She had a small voice. She was so unique in the fact that she had plenty of money, but she would haggle if she was in the mood over a 10-cent glass of orange juice, but yet she'd turn right around, and if she you needed it, you could call her on the phone, or I could, and for the counties that I was working with, and she knew they were mountain counties. And I'd call her, and I had many times when I was working there. Say, Miss Gray, we need $500, or we need $1,000, or I need rent for a building, or I need help on hiring a lawyer. And she'd say, how much do you need? And the friends will pay for half of it, Jewel, and I'll pay for the other half. But she, in turn, would donate the money to the friends for the friends to take the credit for giving it to the libraries. Now, she did this in Wolf County, by furnishing the money to put the shelving up. She did that. She also bought roping for those steps to go up the second story because she was afraid she'd fall down. One time Mrs. Gray came, and she liked to ride bookmobiles. And she rode the bookmobile in Morgan County. She was intensely interested in Morgan County because people all over the state had put the money up for it. And she put the Venetian blinds up in the place because it was all windows. So she would ride a bookmobile one day over there. And Carl Davis was the driver, and we took her to Frenchburg Job Corps and to Frenchburg, and we took her to the Morgan County Boys Camp where the boys were put that had committed offenses, but they weren't very bad offenses. So we went to both places, and it was a long drive, and it was rather warm, and as elderly people tend to do, she got sleepy. Well, Carl was driving back from Frenchburg Job Corps, and Marjorie Smith was Mrs. Gray's companion. She put her head over on the charge-out desk, and she went to sleep. Well, Mrs. Gray sat up front on the jump seat, we always call it, and she started dozing. Well, I had to stand behind her and hold her, keep her from falling out, and Carl drove. It took us about 2 hours and something to drive from Frenchburg Job Corps, which normally is about half an hour's drive. Because he drove so slowly, and around curves, he would just sort of creep around curves, and we let Mrs. Gray sleep all that night. She was very small. She ate very daintily. She did not eat very much. But she was so intensely interested in libraries. In fact, she was a part of getting bookmobiles together back in 1954. And her interest never did diminish as long as she lived. She was pushing libraries. Another time Mrs. Gray did something that I thought was rather unique. She slept in my lap all the way from Wolf County just about into Lawrence County. Gwen Davenport, who's a tall lady who's a well-known Kentucky writer, came down and she wanted to ride bookmobiles in Lawrence County to do an article with the Reader's Digest. Gwen did. So she brought Mrs. Gray down and I was supposed to go with them to Lawrence County and ride bookmobiles with them. And so Gwen rode the jump seat, Mrs. Gray sat in a lawn chair in back of the charge out desk, and I sat next to her. Well, we had a driver then in Lawrence County that drove really nuts. He flew. And so we asked Sparks, please don't drive so fast because you have a very dear lady riding with us. And
he promised very faithfully he wouldn't, and he held true to that until just about 30 minutes outside of Louisa, and we were coming back into the town, and he forgot she was on the bookmobile, and he just sort of floorboarded it. We went around the curb, and if you've seen small children being caught around the waist to keep them hitting something, I caught Miss Grace. She left her chair, was going to hit her head over there. So I had a very close relationship with Mary Belknap Gray. She used to call me on the phone and talk to me about different tiny libraries and different bookmobiles and what they were doing. She was so interested in them. Well, in Alsa County, we passed our library tax and then moved into part of a renovated drugstore. So they do have a library to back up their bookmobile program there. In Estill County, Mrs. Blackburn went with me one day. She said, I want you to go to Estill County with me. We have problems down there, and we need to know what to do. And they want a library, but we need to know what to do. So we went in there, and their library was in the courthouse, and they had the most bedraggled books I have ever seen. They were literally worn out. So we put a demonstration in Estill County. And when you put a demonstration in, you fund it for 2 years. You pay the salaries for your bookmobile librarian, your county librarian. You pay the rent on the building. You furnish the books, the book collections, and you do the technical work, you do the supervising of it. Well, Isel Broadus was hired as county librarian, and Anita Jones was hired as bookmobile librarian. And of course, I had to train Anita, and I had to train Isel as well. I had never been to Estill County until I went with Mrs. Blackburn down there. We rented a building, and right across from almost under the stoplight, the first stoplight in Irvin, as you're going into Irvin from Clay City. Okay, we had a perfect place for people, when they stopped at the stoplight, had to see the sign library. And in the back, we had a place to stop the bookmobile and park it, so when you go into a county, you take a county, you divide it into a pie-shaped areas. Or I always do, just the wedges as to which direction you would travel, not to go back over your roads, but to make sure you cover each section of the county. So we divided up I tried to set up the programs on a 2-week basis. We divided the county into 10 pieces of pie, so to speak. Okay, each section we tried to make sure we got as many homes as we could. And what we'd do, we'd go the furthest area from the library, if we're starting at the north section and work it around, then we would not retrace our tracks. We knocked on doors. If you're going to sell a program, you sell it like selling insurance. You knock on the door, you say, I'm from the Estill County Public Library or the Lee County Public Library or whatever county you're representing, and say, I'm with the bookmobile program, and I'm here to explain our services to you. We'd like for you to come in and look at the bookmobile. And sometimes say, I'm not interested in books, or I don't want to read. And we'd have to say, then just come out and look at it. 90% of the time, you get someone on the bookmobile and find out what they like to read. They leave with books.
These were mostly people who'd never been on a bookmobile before,
Well, they didn't know
right?
what bookmobiles were. They keep saying, how much did it cost? How much are you going to charge me? Are they mine when I get them? And if you have to explain, you're borrowing them, or you take care of them and you give them back. I know when we did the Wolf, the Lee, and the Estill, and the Owsley demonstrations and partial demonstrations, people were totally amazed that they could borrow books. And this has not only been true in those counties, but all the counties. Mm-hmm. That the books are being loaned to us, that we can use them, that we eventually will have to establish a taxing district to keep them. But right now they're free, and they of course are free after you do the taxing district, you just pay your taxes. But the amount of taxation is so small that you can't buy a book for what your taxes cost you. I was working with one of the most fascinating counties I ever worked with was Johnson County. Because Greer had me go over there and train drivers and train drivers and train drivers. We had a lot of drivers in Johnson County. We'd keep them for a few months and they'd quit. And to start with, we had a driver when I first started going into Johnson County that was a young man. And the library board thought there's something wrong with that program, so they asked me to ride with the driver. And I rode with the driver, and after a couple of weeks, I knew what was wrong with the driver, because I let him do his own thing. I never suggested anything. We did his rounds. We sat on the river bank. We sat behind his restaurant. We went out and visited mother and father. You know, just general things like that. That was his normal working day. I told him, I said, you just do what you normally do. And I didn't offer a suggestion until after I'd ridden with his total rounds. And then I went and met with the board. And well, I first met with Pearl Green, then I met with the board. And we explained what was the little problems. Asked him to correct them. The board asked him to correct them after a period of time and quit. But you can't do a bookmobile program like that, Gene. You have to be interested in what you're doing. You're not just driving it for the money, because there's not that much money in a program. You drive because you want to do a service to the people. In Johnson County, I got real worried about the people over there. And because we were going into sections he'd never been, and we were knocking on doors. You take one side of the road and I take one side of the road. We went into a section called, I think it was Bloody Creek. I don't know if that's for sure if that's the name. Maybe it was Muddy Creek. But every house we knocked on, the people kept saying they couldn't see. And you know, that bothered me. In about 3 days' time of hearing these people say they couldn't see up in various sections up in that coal mining country, I talked to the county librarian, and we talked to the health agent, and the health nurse told us that it wasn't they couldn't see, they couldn't read. And they were embarrassed to tell us they couldn't read. Mm-hmm. So I quit worrying about them, but it's one county that taught me something. In one section, we were knocking on doors, and one little lady came to the door, gray-haired lady. She had on a house coat that was, one side of it was flopping down, and the other side was pretty straight. She had on floppy house shoes. And I learned never to take people by what they look like. Because she wanted a book of ancient history. She wanted poems, some of Poe's works, Edgar Allan Poe. I couldn't believe that little old lady. She wanted a book on psychology. And she didn't look like she could read. Well, we only had two of the books that she asked for, and we told her we'd bring the rest of them back. And in 2 weeks when we were back, she and her grandson had alternated reading that book of ancient history to each other. They read it at night aloud to each other. So then I determined, don't ever judge anybody by what they look like. In Johnson County, we had some of the most unique people we served in Bookmobile I ever worked with. We had a young man who was in a wheelchair, and he did a recording for me to help us pass the library tax there. He and his mother lived alone in a little shack on the side of the road. And he never asked you for fiction. He asked you for classified material and deep classified material. We had a little lady in the nursing home named Geraldine. Geraldine was a young lady. She was about 26 or 27 years old, beautiful. And the bookmobile was all of us she got reading materials. Because we had changed drivers about four times, and a young man named Tommy Reynolds was the driver then. We had three people in that home that always stood out in my mind. Geraldine was one of them, and a little old lady named Effie. Effie kept losing books. We never could find out where Effie's books were. And Reynolds was a minister. And he had asked me, was it permissible to hold prayer with people? And I said, I think it's wonderful if that's what you'd like to do. If they ask you, don't push your religion, but if they ask you, then hold prayer with them. Well, he was in Effie's room one day. He came back out real excited. He said, I know where our books are. And I said, where, Tom? He said, under Effie's bed in the box. He said, I took her three books in when I went in, and she hopped out of bed and put them in that box. And she said, that box is full of books. So we didn't ask her about them that day, but we asked the nurse, would she help us get them back? And so she did over a period of time. We got most every book that was checked in. Yeah. Geraldine was beautiful. She could not walk. She was in a wheelchair, and she was A lot of times they'd have to tie her in a wheelchair with a sheet. Immediately after her books were delivered to her, she would be asked to put back in bed. And the reason why she wanted to go back to bed so quickly, she wanted to read. She could not hold, her hands were so deformed, she could not hold the books, you know, in her lap to hold them up because it would be heavy. But in the bed, she could prop it on a pillow and she could read. We did a film in Eastern Kentucky about the bookmobile program called The Light in the Mountains. It's a 28-minute film. It was shown on WAVE. They did it for us. It has been shown on KET twice, and I use it for programs. I have a copy of it. It was shown to the President's Commission on Libraries.
When was that film made?
In 68.
Is it at the Department for Libraries?
They can't find a copy. Somebody told me the other day they had asked the department for a copy and they couldn't find it. Fortunately, they gave me a copy, and I have a copy. And that is one of the neatest films I have ever seen. We used it. It takes the four counties that I was working with. Well, not all the counties, but the three or four of the counties that I was working with. Like Johnson County is in the film, Morgan County is in the film, and Lawrence County is in the film. The three counties, those counties.
Their bookmobiles.
Their bookmobile program at that time. And I bet you never heard of that before.
No, I haven't.
That, at that particular,
does it show the daily operation of the bookmobile?
Yes, ma'am. It certainly does. And I use it in workshops when I do workshops. Well, in fact, I used it down in the Central City last month on September.
But the only copy you're aware of is in your
possession? It may be at the department, but Ann White told me that she could not, that she had asked for that film and hadn't found it. It's called The Light in the Mountains. So you might ask Gaudel Visual or the film room down there for The Light in the Mountains. But Geraldine's in that film. And the day that we filmed that, we had the film crew from WAVE. Well, actually, we had two people. We had Bob Kay and this cameraman, who his name was Lowe. And Geraldine knew that we were coming. The nursing home had been warned, had been alerted that we were coming. And she was dressed in pink. She had been tied in the chair with her sheet. A nurse and I stood directly behind her chair while she was being filmed. She was so excited about that. The bookmobile was bringing somebody to her, and she was going to be a part of something that would be shown for a long time. Now, we had several people in Johnson County. We had a one-room school. We had the Frenchburg Job Corps in that film, the Morgan County Boys Camp is in the film. You ought to see the thing, because it explains to some extent what the bookmobile means to the people of Eastern Kentucky. As I say, it was filmed for WAVE, and it was put on video film, and then it was put on regular 16mm film.
Well, it's wonderful to find out that such a film exists. We're going to have to change tapes before we continue our discussion, so let's take a pause for a moment. This is a second tape in the continuation of an interview with Jewel Thomas, the Deputy Regional Librarian and Cumberland Regional Library. The tape is a part of the Oral History Project, Bookmobiles and Historical Perspective. Jewel, would you continue the story of your experiences in Eastern Kentucky?
I sure will, Jean. There was some quite exciting times in Eastern Kentucky with the establishment of libraries, because when I moved into that area, getting libraries started was just something entirely new to the people from Frankfort as well as the people in Eastern Kentucky. Now we've gone through the partial demonstrations and demonstrations in Wolf, Lee, Owsley, and Estill counties. and the library set up in Morgan County. Okay, in the areas that we worked, the Big Sandy region had several more counties in it. We worked with Lawrence County and Johnson County, and then eventually put a demonstration into Greenup County. And in all the counties, Pearl Greer primarily set me to work with bookmobiles, and we had quite a number of experiences with all the counties and all the drivers, because we were taking something new into the counties. We were taking something that the people were not used to. They had to be shown and they had to be sold. To sell a program, when you start into a county, you sell it as if you were selling a product, and you are selling a desire to read. You're selling the idea that something new and exciting can be found within inside the covers of a book, because it is a storehouse of knowledge you're carrying around. And people may tell you that they're sick or they can't read or they can't see or whatever. And as I told you, and I don't think this is on tape, in one of the areas in Johnson County, I was quite concerned, because we were working into an area that had not had drivers, had not had the bookmobile. And the people kept saying they couldn't see. And after about 3 days, I became so concerned that I talked to the county librarian about it, and then we talked to the health nurse about it. And the nurse explained to us those people could not read, and their pride would not let them admit to the fact they could not read. So they told us they could not see. It relieved all of our minds, and I must tell you the story of Will. In this area that we were going into, it was a coal mining camp. And the driver was taking one side of the road and I was taking the other side of the road. We were knocking on doors to explain the bookmobile is here from Johnson County. It's a free service. We'd like for you to come out and look at the books. And it was hot the day we were in this particular area. And the two rather heavy set ladies in shorts came on the bookmobile, and it was a real small man came on. His name was Will, we found out. Because we always ask people when they come on the bookmobile, what do you like to read? What kind of books do you enjoy? Or what do you do as a hobby? Or what do you do to put around the house? Well, before poor little Will could even open his mouth, one of those women looked straight at the driver and me, and Ernie Van Hoos was driving. He was a young man. And we were standing at the front of the bookmobile, and she looked straight at us, and she said, "Now I want to tell you all something." She said, "Don't you give Will no love stories." He says, "He gets some young ideas, and I've got to put up with him." Well, we gave Will 2 Zane Grey Westerns. And as far as I know, poor old Will never got anything but Zane Grey Westerns, because we felt like that his wife was perfectly safe if he read the Western. It's that kind of thing that makes driving worthwhile. Just like the nursing home that Geraldine was in, there was a retired school teacher. And he loved the Civil War. He loved to read about the Civil War. And one day he asked us for a history book on the Civil War, and he said that he'd rather not have it too complicated. So it was about a 6th or 7th grade story based on the Civil War. It was actually fact written as fiction. And he said, "Can I keep this book longer than 2 weeks' time?" And we told him we could keep it as long as no one asked for it. So we'd recheck it each time we went back. And after about 6 weeks, one of the school teachers knew that we had the book in Johnson County. She requested it for her students to use. So we told this gentleman we'd have to take the book back. Well, I felt terrible, because, and the driver did too, because this man stood and cried and said, "I only like a few chapters, having it all memorized. Could I not keep it?" We told him that we explained to you when we let you have the book that you could not keep it forever, that we'd let you keep it as long as another person or a teacher or someone did not request it. We'll have to take it. But we bought a copy of that book and gave it to him.
He had memorized
it almost all the whole chapter, except just a few chapters. You know, it's this kind of thing. The thrill of a person finding something that they want and they get to be such a part of their lives. That's why the bookmobile has played such an important part in people's lives, because it gave them a chance to get what they wanted, to escape into another world, to leave the drudgery of everyday household chores behind. Okay, we went to Greenup County with a demonstration. And the driver down there, I had to ride with the driver to teach her to ride a big bookmobile. She was petrified of that bookmobile. She had been driving the small green bookmobile, so for about the first month when we started down there, she would not drive the big one. She was only driving the little one. So we determined one day, we'll take all the books out of the little one, put it on the big one. And she has to drive the big bookmobile. Well, no, she wouldn't do that. She would let me drive it, and she'd follow behind in her car, or she'd ride with me. But then she'd get on the bookmobile and check the books out. Well, one day I asked her to meet me at a grocery store and leave her car. And I knew we were going out in the county, way out in the county. She had shown me on the map, as I told you, we divided the counties up into past sections, and she showed me where we would be going, and it would be way out in the county. Well, I did to her exactly what Bob Allender did to me one time. I got her on that bookmobile, and I took her out in the county, and we turned around and started back toward Greenup, and I pulled over to the side of the road, and I parked it. And I got out, and I told her, I said, now you can drive it, or we'll sit here. And she just begged me and pleaded with me to drive that bookmobile back into Greenup. And I said, no, ma'am, I won't do it. I'm going to sit right here on this jump seat, and you can drive it, or we'll sit here. So she begged and she pleaded, and she almost cried. And she finally said, well, I said, all you got to do is put it in gear and drive it. Because it was not an automatic shift. It was a straight shift. The little green bookmobile was a straight shift. So she eventually put that thing in gear, and it was almost dark when we got back that afternoon, but she drove back in. She had to drive from then on because she could not say, I don't know how. But I had that same thing pulled on me the first time I ever drove a bit more big mobile in our home county. I had gone to Columbia to get it, and Bob Allender rode with me, or I was riding with him, I thought, back to Burksville. Well, after he came down the Marybone Hill, he parked it. And I did this, what this lady did. I begged him to please drive it into Burksville. And he got in the driver's seat in the jump seat, said, you drive it or we'll sit here. I knew it would work because it had worked with me. It also worked with her. She was petrified of the big vehicle. But she got up enough nerve. She wasn't going to sit out there in the county with me all night long, so we'd go home. She made a good driver.
There are some special demands of bookmobile libraries, right?
You're telling me. But you know, you have to be able to drive or you're not going to be effective as a bookmobile driver. I had to go to Paducah one time. They had moved from the old Carnegie building into another building. And they had changed the jobs with a lot of the people that had been working in the library. Tom Sutherland was the librarian there, and he had assigned different people to different jobs. But Lorraine Fox, a lady up in her 60s, could continue working until she reached the retirement age. But the only job that was available to Lorraine was the bookmobile driver. She had never driven anything with the exception of an automatic shift car. The bookmobile was a huge blue and white bookmobile, you know, the big ones, the Gerstenslager. Mm-hmm. She was petrified. She was scared to death. And it was in August. And I went down, and Tom told me, said, now you have to come and train her and teach her to drive. So she was taken out to the football field in that bookmobile and learned to drive it in circles and to try to back it up. And honest to God, I was scared the week that I was down there. Because we'd pull out in traffic, and she'd stall the motor. Now, there's a lot of traffic through Paducah. Well, Lorraine knew that the only way she would have a job is to learn to drive the bookmobile. When I left on Friday, I started working with her on Monday, and I left on Friday afternoon. Friday morning, she did her first stop at a community stop where children came to meet her, and it was covered by newspaper coverage. We had a reporter out there to interview her and the children, and she made a good driver, but she had to learn to drive the bookmobile. She knew how to check books out because she'd booked as an aide in the library, but she had to do it in order to have a job. She had to have a job because she and her husband needed the money. But she made a good driver and worked until it was time for her to retire. In the work that I have done in working with the state, they have called me a bookmobile person. In fact, some of them have called me a specialist, which I don't think anybody's a specialist in anything. But I have enjoyed working with the bookmobile program because I so intensely believe in the bookmobile program. Of everything I have ever done, working with people and working with the books and putting the two together has been extremely important. In 1973, my husband was transferred back to Cumberland County. I was transferred back. He came back June the 15th. Well, we knew a month in advance or 2 months in advance that he was coming back to Cumberland County. And so I asked the Department of Library and Archives to transfer me back as well. And I requested that they transfer my state van with me and the typewriter that I was using. And they did. They transferred all three of us back here together. We were living in a trailer in eastern Kentucky, and so I moved it back, and they let me use my trailer as an office. It's been my office now since 73. It still is right now. So we came back here, and I was assigned to work as acting regional librarian for a couple of years, and then Bob Allender came back as a regional librarian, and I'm the deputy regional librarian. Macquarie County did not have a library program. Casey County, they had had one for 30 minutes, an official library program in Macquarie County for 30 minutes, because they had established a taxing district, and 30 minutes later it was taken out. Back then, back then when that was done, you could do an anti-petition at the same time, and the fiscal court could take one and then do the other one. Now there's a 3-year waiting period between the putting in of a library district and the taking out of a library district, which gives people time to settle in. So I had been working in Pulaski County. And Pulaski County had established a branch library, and I had worked with them in moving books in and getting the shelving in and with the library board. And at that dedication service that day, Prof. Hume from Macquarie County and two or three other people from Macquarie County, Mr. Agnew and his wife, were there, and they said they wanted to talk to me. Okay, Margaret Willis was there, and Charles Hines was a state librarian at that time. And so they talked to all of us, and they said, we want a library in Macquarie County. Well, Mr. Hines told them, we don't have any money. We can't take that financial, they replied. We have to have a library in our county. And so I visited over there several times, and they had a room in the basement of the courthouse that the fiscal court would let us have for the library. And Charles Hines told me to go down and tell them that all we would have would be duplicate books and bits and pieces of shelving to start with. No, that didn't satisfy them. They wanted a library. And then he came up with the idea of giving them a $50,000 achievement grant if they would put in a library district. Well, they discussed it for a while. We met with the Lions Club. I remember Mr. Hines and I met with their Lions Club on December the 2nd, pouring snow. We stayed in a motel, we froze to death. But the enthusiasm and the chilly supper was really great. So at that meeting that night, those people decided they were going to vote a library tax in. And they did. In 6 weeks' time, they had it in. They had the petitions. Mr. House had brought copies of petitions and everything down with him, and that night everybody went out with the petitions in hand. 6 weeks later, they had the required number of signatures, and I met with the library board. We had a library board established. I met with the library board, and we went to fiscal court. And the fiscal court called for a vote. They got a motion and a second, and they called for a vote. And everybody voted nay. And one man, he voted against it, and he swore he didn't after the meeting was over with. But, of course, his vote had been recorded as a no, and we lost. The library board lost. I have never seen people so mad in all my life as that library board people and the supporters of the library board. So they cornered each of the magistrates and they talked to them. And the magistrate who said he voted for it, but they recorded it as a no, cornered the county judge, and they had a call meeting that afternoon. They took the library. So then we were in one room in the basement of the courthouse. We had a county librarian, Kay Mora, hired, and Peggy Rector, who was her bookmobile driver. We had a Nancy Tucker was our first driver. And then when she quit, Peggy Rector is our driver now. But the program over there is just like the program everywhere else. You have to sell it. You have to get people. You divide your county into areas. Then you visit each of the areas in that county explaining we have bookmobiles. We have the services from your public library. And it's here. It's yours to use. She has a good service. We have a 7-penny tax in that county to support the library and to support their bookmobile. The bookmobile program does summer reading programs. It plans various things for the children. It goes to nursing homes, to daycare centers. The bookmobile program in Kentucky started small. Started with bread trucks, converted bread trucks with bookshelves stuck inside that did not hold the books on the shelves very well. But it grew and it grew and it grew, and now it's in almost every county in our Commonwealth. The bookmobile program is something that has been a joy to watch grow, because it's an idea that started with an idea, and only a dreamer can dream of something like a bookmobile. Only a dreamer who can have vision of what the future could hold would even conceive the idea of a bookmobile, because you're taking library service that you normally think of a spinster who has glasses who says shh all the time to everybody who comes in. You're taking that idea out of the library. You're taking it into a vehicle that travels with books of every description to every class of people. Maybe you have never stopped to think about this, Gene, but so many of our people in Kentucky right now are the older citizens. Older citizens are growing by leaps and bounds all over the United States. And if the older citizens ever got together, they would control what's going on in the United States right now. But our older citizens become sort of housebound to some extent, because a lot of them cannot drive, are afraid to drive. They have no transportation. They need something to occupy their time. And a lot of them read. But they can't get to the public library. Even though they have a telephone, they still can't get to that public library. And I did an investigation on books by mail. Books by mail are so prohibitive with the price, you can't even conceive of using them. So the only alternative is to use the bookmobile. I did a study on the price of a book circulated from the bookmobile and a book circulated from the library. It'll surprise you the difference in how more economical the book on the bookmobile is than the book from the library, even though you have to have that library to back up your bookmobile with. You have to have the book stock that's in that library to supplement your bookmobile. Without this, library services in Kentucky would go down, because a lot of people cannot get to that public library. Now you'll hear critics say, I see the same person off the bookmobile, use the bookmobile, and they'll come in town and they come to the library. But if you see a person doing that, you see a person intensely interested in reading. They read from both places. Now we have people, and I work with drivers in Lake Common District. When I was transferred back, one thing I did to start with, I rode with every driver in every county for several days on end to see what kind of program we had. Then after we got McQuarrie County in, Casey County wanted a library. They did the same thing McQuarrie County did. They passed a library tax to get their library program set up. They got a $50,000 achievement grant. They bought a good size a lot that had an old building on it. And we converted that old building, an old dwelling building, into a library building. Right now the Senior Citizens Center is located in. We have a new library building in Casey County. We have a new library building in McQuarrie County. The building in Casey County is already paid for because we got an Appalachia grant to help build that building. We have an extremely good bookmobile program in Casey County. There's a young man who drives it. You don't find many drivers in the state of Kentucky that are men. But Jim is a very good driver. He knows his people, and he helps them do their selecting. And he knows his vehicle, and he's good on the repair and care and maintenance of that vehicle. So he's a good driver. He's done things to the inside of the bookmobile to make it more cost effective, like adding extra shelving to put paperbacks. Now paperbacks is something that when I started driving, we never used. Because you thought then of paperbacks as being junky books. Mm-hmm. Right now, paperbacks in some bookmobiles is half the book stock. And I have some people tell me that the women will meet the bookmobile and take off paper sackfuls of paperbacks. They also, in one county when I was working in Eastern Kentucky, we used to have a lady that meet the bookmobile with a wheelbarrow. Her mother was sick. Her mother was housebound. And this woman had to stay in the house most of the time with her mother. So she'd meet the bookmobile with a wheelbarrow, and she'd load it up with books, and she'd go trucking down the hillside to get home. That kind of thing, to me, is what the bookmobile is all about. Now, I have talked to a lot of people who are very much pushers for the bookmobile, but you will find people in various sections of the state who are very anti-bookmobile. They think it's an old thing. It has no use anymore. But the way I see it, there will always be a place for the bookmobile. The bookmobile's role has changed in one respect. When I started driving, we furnished almost the entire school system's supplementary reading materials. Well, now we still supplement to some extent, but not to the extent we did then. More women are working now than what used to. When I started driving, more housewives used it than they do now. Because now most households have to have two working adults to support the household. Economics have changed in the last 25 years. Things are different. But the primary reason we have bookmobiles is to give people the necessary reading materials when they need it. And so many people in this day and time have transportation, but there's still a segment of our population that will always have to have service. And the older people, 60 and above, because of the medical technology that we have now and because of the advances of scientific various things, we will always have older people coming on more because the birth rate is so far down. The older generation is living 10 years longer.
And do I hear you saying correctly then that you feel that's the group of people
bookmobiles
will serve most?
In, say, 10 years from now, the way things are going, yes, ma'am. The older generations of people are the people we're going to be having to serve. But right on the other hand, a young mother with three kids at home is just as disadvantaged as an older person, because in the first place, the county librarian don't want a woman with three kids running loose and pushing the books against the shelves or pulling them out on the floor. And maybe the husband has the only car. Well, she has no way of getting to town. The older generations and of people is going to be one of our prime objectives that we're going to be serving. But also, there's going to be a lot of people that's going to be, I'd almost say, disadvantaged. Even though they may have money, even though they may not have money, but they still don't have transportation to get to town, or they've got someone in the home that's house confined, they can't go off and leave. You're going to have an entire age spectrum that you're going to still have to be serving. To me, the bookmobile is a requirement that's going to have to be with our library service.
You have certainly indicated, as you have been speaking, that you don't just drive a bookmobile someplace and park it and expect everybody to come to it. You do have to promote it. What advice would you give to someone who was planning to establish a new bookmobile program as far as promoting its services?
Well, the first thing I would do is, I told you, you have to get a person with a good personality who can get along with people. He or she has to do three things, have to have three good qualifications. They have to know how to drive. They have to know how to use the care and maintenance of a vehicle. They have to know, listen to that vehicle, because it'll talk to them and tell them to some extent what's wrong, what's needed. The care and maintenance of a vehicle, the love of people, the ability to get along with people, to communicate with people, to know your book stock. Then you have to sell your program. If you're a new driver starting in, first thing to do, get your county map. Go to your county highway bar and get you a map of your county. Divide it into workable sections, as if you were cutting a pie. Assign a section of that county for each day, if you're going to do a 2-week schedule or a 3-week schedule. Then you go out to the furthest end of that schedule and you work back towards your county library. You cannot do this all in one day's time. You won't be able to knock on all the doors to find who wants service and who does not want service. But you work every house over a period of time to know who your people are. And then don't just not go back to the homes that did not take books the first time. Give them a month or 2 months and then go back to the same homes, because circumstances can change so drastically that a person who did not take books a month ago may be desperate for books the next time you go. It's a sell job from the word go.
You're a traveling salesman, right?
Yes, ma'am, and you're selling the ability and the wish to read.
Be sold on your product and willing to sell it.
And carry it to feet. Jean, you must... As I told you, you're selling the ability. The person may not be able to read very well, but you can help them through encouraging the reading of the books from the bookmobile and from the public library to increase their ability to read.
Would you like to make a concluding remark on the significance you feel bookmobiles have played in library service in Kentucky? That's a biggie.
Ooh, Jean, is that a biggie? And the thing's going to have to turn us over. Well, to start, I really have no idea of how we would even go about summarizing what I feel like with maybe I can this way. I started when bookmobiles were new, when book stock was limited, and I have watched and worked with it. I have since 1957, when we had very little, to where we are today. I have watched the people come on a bookmobile not knowing they wanted a book and yet leaving with books. I've watched people in the many counties that I've worked in various sections of the state with the ability to make book selections and to grow with their reading abilities. Bookmobiles are here to stay. They've been a very important part of our past, and they should be a very important part of our future.
Let's hope so. And I believe you're right. I agree with you. Thank you so much for this informative reflections on the history of bookmobiles in Kentucky. We appreciate the contribution you have made to them. Thank you, Jewel.
You're entirely welcome, Jean.